we have fairly strong voter ID laws in Georgia. Has the voter ID laws, to your knowledge, prevented anyone from voting in Georgia?
No, not that I'm aware of. I think that was something that came through during our lawsuits that the state won and the Secretary of State's office won on all the voter ID lawsuits. There was never a voter that anybody could find that wasn't able to participate because they didn't have a photo ID. And we've been through, gosh, I don't know how many lawsuits, some of them before I got in office, and I think there was one or two after I was sworn in as Secretary of State. But, you know, the thing that's unique about our law here is if you don't have a photo ID and you're on the rolls, you can still vote an absentee ballot. And we'll also give you a free photo ID if you don't have one. So I think that's unique to some of the other photo ID laws that have passed around the country in the last several years. So we're, I think, on really good ground in Georgia. And I'm not sure what our latest number is, but the free photo IDs we've given out since 2006-07 when it was implemented, you know, the last time I looked, it was around 30,000 or so, give or take a few thousand, maybe 35. That's really not a lot when you hear news stories like I remember back to the North Carolina voter ID debate, and they were saying, you know, there's three or 400,000 people that didn't have photo IDs, and this was going to impact them. So, you know, I think there's a lot of rhetoric out there. My philosophy is I do think it helps us have more secure elections. That's why I'm support the legislation.
But when you say secure elections, every investigation of voter fraud has shown that voter fraud that could be prevented by voter ID is basically non-existent. I mean, statistically.
Well, I would say it's non-existent in Georgia because we have the photo ID law. I mean, I don't know how you prove it if you don't have it, because people could go show, you know, in the old days you could just go show a power bill. Well, how do you know who that person is? So, I mean, you can argue that. But there's no question that having people show up at a polling location and knowing who they are before they vote makes the election more secure.
Andre, your response to that, because some of the investigations that have gone that went back before we had some of these voter ID laws have also shown basically statistically no voter fraud in terms of in-person impersonation. However, we have had trouble with some absentee ballot fraud in some very small cases. And there have certainly been problems, like when they study some states, the fraud that arises is by and large much higher percentage are on the part of election officials. So how are we to handle this concept of voter fraud? If there is a problem, where is it?
So I think it's important to consider the history of attempts to restrict the franchise. And that really informs a lot of the debate. So it's not just what's happened in the last 10 years or even in the last 15 years with the Help America Vote Act, which did actually require a different level of identification in order to register to vote. And that was being done in response to September 11th. And so we still have to talk about othering that kind of goes along with that. But from a broader standpoint, if we think about the disenfranchising state conventions at the turn of the 20th century, so the late 19th and early 20th century, where states emboldened by Jim Crow laws changed their state constitutions to restrict access to the vote. And so this is the place where felon disenfranchisement gets introduced. And so this is the place where poll taxes and literacy tests and other types of things get introduced into the American voting culture. There is this inherent suspicion that any attempt to try to restrict voting is being intended to restrict access to minorities in particular, particularly African Americans.
But is that true? Let's say in a place like Georgia, where, mm-hmm. as Brian was saying, that your ID is free. And as far as I know, Georgia is not one of those states that's closed down offices as has happened in other states where you might end up having to drive over 100 miles to get to a place to get your ID. I don't think that's happened in Georgia. So while the suspicion is there, is that suspicion founded?
So I think the suspicion kind of comes into which states were the first, especially as restrictions on what states could do tightened up, which states were the ones that were the first to be able to do that, and did people say things during legislative debates that would have suggested that they may have been attempting to restrict the rights to vote to some people. So people look at partisanship, and so they look at these laws being put forward by Republican state legislatures in an attempt to perhaps depress the Democratic vote, which, if you look at minority voting rates, you know, African Americans are going to be overwhelmingly Democratic. That's where people start to cry dirty pool, for instance. And so while, as far as I know, nobody in Georgia Georgia openly made those kinds of comments, there is evidence in other states. Yeah, like Pennsylvania, for instance, where people did openly say that they were trying to depress Democratic voter turnout. So I think because of that, and because oftentimes when states act, they don't act in isolation. States are individual laboratories of democracy, so states usually pick up on things that are going on in other states. It just calls the entire enterprise into question. And we do have to admit that, you know, by and large, most people, including minorities, support voter identification laws because they don't seem that difficult because most people do have IDs. The question becomes, does it have a disproportionate impact on the registration of people who don't necessarily have access to the IDs? So those are the poor, those are the elderly, those are going to be disproportionately of color. And so does it make sense to make it harder for that particular group to vote when the evidence of voter fraud doesn't appear to be as widespread as most people think? About a third of people will say that they think voter fraud is a possibility, but the evidence just doesn't bear it out that that happens widespread in this country. I think we have visions of Tammany Hall in our heads, and that really hasn't been the case in the United States for a really long time.
Well, one of the things when you compare, I mean, when, you know, you can talk about all these reports and theories and everything else, but when you look at the numbers, when you compare the 04 election to 08, a presidential year, you know, before and after photo ID, 06
yeah,
to 10.
Yeah, from 04 to 08, I mean, the minority African-American turnout increased 42%. Hispanic turnout increased 140%.
And if you were saying that Republican legislators were trying to suppress minority participation, I mean, that's also like saying the Department of Homeland Security is trying to do the same thing to keep people from flying when they're checking your ID, when you have to go through security at the airport or to get other benefits, you know, SNAP and other things where you have to, you know, state Medicaid, I believe, other government benefits, you have to show a photo ID to get. I don't think those legislators are passing that to suppress minorities from participating in that. So I don't really buy that argument. I think the, you know, from my perspective, I mean, our philosophy is to have secure, accessible, and fair elections in Georgia. And we want to make the elections secure, but we also have done a tremendous amount in our state to make it easy for people to participate. When you think about online voter registration, I mean, anybody in Georgia that's got a driver's license can register to vote 24 hours a day, 7 days a week online now.
So what about automatic voter registration, which is something that at least two dozen states are considering it? Places like California have had a huge amount of success. When I say success, they've discovered it saved them money. They've been able to update people's addresses, and it's actually shown that it probably cuts down on voter fraud when it comes to absentee ballots, where there's actually been some evidence of
it. Yeah, well, I don't know if I would disagree with that. I'm not a fan of automatic voter registration. You know, I am a fan of the states running their elections. I think that's a big debate that we're fixing to have. So if California wants to have automatic voter registration, and that's what their legislative leaders want to do, then I think they ought to have the right to do that. I think that would be a bad mistake. I mean, I like the way that we have our voter registration set up here in Georgia. And look, there's some people that don't want to be registered. I mean, it's America. You can make up your mind what you want to do.
Well, they have an opt-out. You can opt out.
Yeah, but you got to opt out. I mean, why wouldn't you let people just opt in? You're having to take the same, you know, same amount of effort to opt out or opt in. You know, why not just let people register if they want to instead of automatically putting them in something? And I think that's going down a pretty scary place, in my opinion, for keeping our voter rolls secure.
So, Andre, what we're really talking about here, and one of the reasons that voter fraud is again rising up, especially here in Georgia, is not necessarily because of the voter ID laws, frankly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think as far as I saw, less than 1% of the state's population here in Georgia actually had to obtain IDs in order to vote, which is tiny. But Georgia is a battleground state for the first time in at least two decades.
Well, in your opinion, it is.
Well, the polls all say that. The polls say that.
Well,
I'll
remind you that
close.
The polls in 2014 said that Michelle Nunn and Jason Carter were beaten Governor Deal and David Perdue, and the race was never close. There
so
was
you
no,
don't think that the race is close between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump?
I do not think we're a swing state to the effects of Ohio and other states.
And he's probably right about that. But for now, we have to look at the level of investment that the major candidates are actually expending into the state. And to the extent that they're spending into the state, that connotes whether or not they think it's competitive. And I think that that's what matters most in the state. To answer your question, Celeste, about What does this mean? I mean, I've written about this. Yeah, Georgia's black voter turnout rates as a function of people who are registered to vote turning out hasn't declined. And so we will see what that looks like in this election cycle in particular. We think that a lot of that has to do with the fact that Barack Obama was on the ballot. So if we look at the 04 to 08 and 12 numbers, that there was a lot of motivation for people to turn out and vote. And I commend this state for not doing things to try to restrict voter access, even though I think we can argue about the shortening of early registration and the complaints. I mean, and if we look at the debates about early registration in the state, particularly in the Metro Atlanta region, where we talk about the placement of early voting locations and whether or not it was going to disproportionately affect one group or the other. People might not have overtly made racial comments, but race was kind of at the subtext of those comments. And I think especially for a state that has a checkered history as we do, I think there has to be a recognition and an understanding that any change is going to garner suspicion because there was a past history. It doesn't mean that there isn't room for redemption there, but that people are going to ask the question because the history in this part of the country has, in fact, been very, very checkered. And it becomes a question not only of looking at voter turnout rates amongst those who are registered, but what registration looks like. So while the empirical data is mixed on what it looks like for overall voter turnout, there is evidence to suggest that there is a burden that's being placed on people at the registration level that's not going to be reflected in those voter turnout levels. So, and then we also have to think about
because you're saying that because voter turnout measures the percentage of people that vote who were eligible voters. And if you are not able to register, then you're not an eligible voter.
You're not going to be factored into that as well. And so, I think it's important for us to just make sure that we cover all of our bases in talking about that. And then also think normatively about what it means to require people to register or to require people to go through hoops. Those inherently, every time you add another layer of responsibility or another barrier to voting, that's going to depress voter turnout. And so I think most people want to make elections as free and as open as possible. And that would be putting as few restrictions in place as possible without allowing people to, without allowing dead people to vote or allowing people to go vote for other people.
I want to bring us back to the issue of voter fraud here. And Brian Kemp rejects the idea that the Georgia is a battleground state. But as you say, Hillary Clinton has decided to send a lot more staff down here and investing amounts in the six figures because she believes that it could possibly swing states here, swing votes here. And there are a lot of electoral votes up for grabs in Georgia. So as I understand it, Brian, you guys have had a number of complaints. This may not be updated, but I read that there were 18 complaints filed so far this year
through
the Stop Voter Fraud website.
Oh, I would think we probably have more than that. I mean, we get, hundreds of complaints every election cycle. Now, there's a wide range to them. We may get a complaint about somebody campaigning, illegally within 150 feet of a polling location, or we may get a complaint about a polling location not being handicap accessible, somebody having a bumper sticker, on their car in the parking lot. I mean, things that... that is a complaint. We take every single complaint we get. It doesn't matter how big or how small. But then we have other, on the other side, a range of complaints where you have, absentee ballot fraud, intimidation at a polling location, things of that, vote buying, things of that nature.
So this is my question, because according to election law experts, the real weak point in the system and the real potential for fraud is absentee balloting. There have been cases of people voting, say that they're registered, end up being registered in more than one state. And so they'll vote in both states through absentee. How do you address that? Because voter ID is not going to help you with absentee ballot fraud.
Yeah, so we have a triple signature check on absentee ballots. So we have the voter's signature on their voter registration card. Then when they send us an application to receive an absentee ballot, they have to sign that form. So when that comes in, the local elections official, they compare those two signatures to make sure they match before they send the ballot out. Then when they send the ballot out, the ballot's voted, it's put inside the blank envelope, then it's put inside an outer envelope that has an oath that the voter signed saying, this is, my ballot, I voted it, that kind of thing. And then when that comes back in, the local elections official will compare that signature to the voter registration card and to the application. So you're comparing all three of those signatures to make sure they match, and that helps cut down on the potential for fraud.
Andre, I'm sure you've heard comments from Donald Trump himself and from his campaign asking for volunteers to be election observers. And he said he needs to make sure people don't vote five times over. How concerned are you that there could be disputes on election day?
One, I would expect that all of the campaigns will have election observers in pivotal places. That's a common practice. So there wasn't anything per se, concerning about Donald Trump saying that. I think the bigger concern is the allegation that he's predicting that elections are going to be rigged, or if he loses, it's because there's some kind of fix in place. And I don't think he's thinking of the type of fix that you would see in terms of people voting multiple times or even dead people voting. I think when he wants to talk about the election being rigged, you're thinking about something like the scandal subplot in season one, where you have somebody
moving a ballot boxes.
Moving a ballot box, or actually, you know, electronically tampering with an election in order to get a favorite outcome. And I mean, I think a lot of people.
The reason I ask if it's of concern is because there has been violence at some rallies. Is that you don't transfer that, you don't think that what may have ended up in a sort of a passionate, sometimes physical confrontation at a political rally could end up in that kind of thing at election day?
That's not a top of the mind concern for me, in part because if you look at homogeneity of districts and homogeneity of precincts, you might have many like-minded people who are living together. And so therefore you would have like-minded people kind of voting together. And that assumes that people are actually getting into conversations while they're in line waiting to vote. And we don't know that that's necessarily going to happen. I think it really depends on how long the lines are on election day.
And usually it's only about how long the lines are.
Yeah. So you may not have the opportunity to have those types of conversations. I've experienced in other parts of the country at local races, the need to have election monitors. And so what's usually going on there is you have a roving team of lawyers who are going around to places. And then in New Jersey, where I watched this firsthand, you would have the campaigns who would have their own election monitors who would be standing there with the election officials, making sure that the right people's names get voted off, and then calling in if something were to happen. And usually where there was a problem, it was between an election official and a voter. So it could be an election official who's going into a voting booth of an elderly person and perhaps voting for them. There were places where you might talk about some type of altercation or something goes wrong with the machine and they kick everybody out and people are being denied their right to vote. It's rarely that type of thing where I was worried about actual fistfights. I probably have seen or heard of one, but it's not at the top of my mind. So usually what people are worried about on election day are election officials, especially if it looks like those election officials are partisan for one candidate, doing something, abusing their authority and trying to sort of tilt the balance in favor of their candidate.
Which is exactly the reason we have the Stop Voter Fraud website, the 1-800 number. We monitor that during the whole election cycle. So, we ask our citizens to help us be the eyes and ears out there. I mean, we have a lot of people don't realize we have a law enforcement division in the Secretary of State's office. We got 20 post-certified investigators. We've got 10 or 12 inspectors. You know, all of those people are out all over the state, strategically placed around the state where we can respond very quickly to an individual precinct, as well as local law enforcement as well. So, you know, I would urge anybody, if there's any kind of confrontation, if anybody ever feels threatened, if they see something that worries them, even if it's trivial, to let us know. We're glad to look at that. I would also, urge them to call their local superintendent or probate judge, whoever the election supervisor is. But if they're not getting a satisfactory answer, they can call the Secretary of State's office. You know, we have a whole election plan from I hate to really say security standpoint, but just so we're ready for the election. I mean, we have a state patrol on alert for us if we have an equipment issue, so we can fly or drive the people from Kennesaw State to the voting location.
The people
or
from
the
Kennesaw
election.
State examine, yeah, and check on the machines themselves.
Right. They do the testing, the ballot building. If we have, and we've had this happen before, you know, it's not normal, but it happens. You have a server go out. They may have to take another server and replace that. That's what they do. We get them there in a secure way. And we have the same type resources if we have some sort of incident going on. We haven't seen those in Georgia, but we are prepared for that.
What kind of turnout are you expecting?
Man, who knows? I one of the things I was going to say, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if African-American participation is down in this election. I think there's a, in my political views, I don't know how excited African-Americans are going to be to go out and vote for Hillary Clinton like they were certainly for Barack Obama. So we'll have to see. But normally, you know, we have a 70 to 75% turnout. I could see that being on the high end because everybody is so polarized. You know, they're going to go vote not necessarily for Trump or Clinton, but maybe against them. That may motivate people. But then I could also see a lower turnout where people are like, I don't like either one of the candidates. I'm just, you know, not going to vote in the presidential race. And maybe you have a lower turnout, maybe not so in statewide elections like the U.S. Senate race or local races, but maybe undervotes in the presidential race. So I don't know. If I had to guess, I'd say it'd probably be around 72, 73%.
So, Andre, let me put that question to you, because here's the thing. I've seen polls that have shown that Democratic turnout is going to be high because especially people of color want to vote against Trump. I've seen polls that show that Republican turnout will be depressed because many Republicans are not happy with their candidate. I've seen polls that show Republican turnout will be high because there's a fear that Georgia could turn blue in this election if they stay home. What do you think turnout might be?
So I think Secretary Kemp laid out the scenarios quite well. When we're usually trying to predict turnout kind of in a theoretical sense, we look at the closeness of the election. We look at a person's pivotality, whether or not they think they're going to play a decisive role in the election, and we look at their interests in the election in addition to cost. So if people don't care one way or the other which candidate wins, so they're turned off by both candidates, that's likely going to depress their turnout. If they see these candidates as stark opposites and they want to make sure that they register support for one or the other, that could, in fact, drive up their turnout. I think for both campaigns and all of the campaigns, this is really a matter of GOTV. I think that there are forces that are both that could drive up turnout and also drive it down. And so a way to control that on the campaign side is to make sure that you mobilize voters. And that means having a presence in the state and doing the door knocking, doing the phone calling, doing all those things to get people out to vote. You know, speaking to African-American voters, while there could be a contingent of people who are scared by Trump, there is also a concern that young blacks are turned off by Hillary Clinton in particular, and that they may choose to sit the election out because they don't feel that they have a viable option. So they may not vote for Jill Stein because that's a wasted vote. And they may just
Jill Stein of the Green Party.
And they may just be turned off to the election process in general and think that elected officials are part of the problem and not the solution to the problems that are of concern to them.
Yeah, I think also, you know, what are the hardcore Bernie Sanders supporters going to do? You know, are they going to actually go vote for Hillary? I mean, that'll be something that'll be interesting to watch as well.
Although turnout among young people is never especially high.
True, but during the Obama years, the share of the electorate that was represented by people age 18 to 29 grew in both 2008 and 2012. I wouldn't hold my breath for that this time around.
Yeah, that'll be something else. It'll be very interesting to watch.
I would be remiss if I walked away from this without at least getting you a chance to respond to the lawsuits that have been filed in the state of Georgia. There have been multiple ones. Project Vote, the NAACP, and Project Vote has been quite strong in their language, saying that, and I'm quoting here Michelle Cantor Cohen, who's election counsel for Project Vote, who says, Secretary Kemp is illegally preventing us from figuring out just what exactly Georgia has been doing with its voter rolls. Your response to to that statement and these lawsuits?
Well, we'll see what the judge has to say about that. I would disagree with her. We have bent over backwards to provide all of the information that they've asked for, and then they're asking for some things that we had a hard time producing just because of the way our system is, and we're not going to give them complete access to our voter registration system. That would be giving away our security secrets and make us vulnerable to a cyber threat. So I'm not real worried about what she's saying about that. I can tell you that even when the lawsuit was filed, you know, they were asking for something different than they had before. So I personally think she's wasting the taxpayers of Georgia's money. And they ought to stop, but we're going to continue to fight that, and we'll fight the other lawsuits that are complaining about us keeping our voter rolls secure. I mean, it's a 7-year process to remove somebody from the voter rolls because they hadn't participated, and I think any Georgian with good common sense knows that people will actually leave the state and move somewhere else, and they may forget to notify their local election official. And so when they haven't participated in two general elections, we'll send them a letter. They don't respond, we move them from active to inactive. Still keeps them on the rolls. They can still participate if they show up. But after two more general elections, if they don't participate, we'll send them another letter. And after that seven-year period, if they haven't responded to us or shown up to vote or sign a petition or anything else, we will finally remove them from the roll to keep our rolls secure and up to date. And some of these groups, they don't want us to do that. They want us to leave people on there forever, which is expensive and it's ridiculous and it doesn't keep your voter rolls secure. So, you know, you can expect us to get more lawsuits. I mean, a lot of these are politically motivated to help drive turnout from the left-leaning groups. We see it every cycle, and I'm sure we'll see more of it this cycle.
That is Georgia Secretary of State Brian Kemp, and we also spoke with Emory University Professor Andra Gillespie. Andra and Brian, thank you both so much.
Enjoyed it.
Thank you.